Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Moviegoers.
Hope we're recording.
Sorry. Yeah,
we started.
I didn't know we were recording.
We've started. You're on. Okay. Yes, hello, everyone. Welcome to the Moviegoers.
Take two.
Sitting here with the regular guys.
Hi, this is Greg.
Hey, what's going on? It's Phil.
And I'm Andy. We are here at the end of summer. Thanks for joining us for one last big summer movie. Elysium. Let's jump right in. My thoughts on it were a little bit, I feel like, I don't know, did you guys have this sense that people have been talking about this movie of like, this is the last kind of maybe good movie of the summer, of those like capital S summer movies, you know?
I had only seen that through a Bill Simmons tweet.
Ooh.
That there's a Grant Lance screening of Elysium. This is supposedly the last good big summer movie.
Yeah. Greg, did you?
Well, I felt like people have been talking about this movie for a long time, so I don't know. I didn't characterize it as a big summer 2013 movie, but
right.
I do believe it was a movie that people were very excited about. You know?
Yeah, I mean, I had that sense. I don't know.
I didn't really feel people were that excited about it, but I mean, I had seen posters and billboards, but somehow I had escaped seeing, like, trailers for it, whether, I don't know.
Yeah, I actually hadn't seen, I don't know if it was because of the sports calendar, like, normally, like, you know, this kind of movie would have been in a, you know, if it had come out at the beginning of the summer, we would have been inundated with it, like, in the NBA Finals or something, but not,
so
not
I,
now.
Other than the poster and hearing that it was Neil Blomkamp who did District 9.
Yeah.
And so I was sort of able to picture what another film of his would look like, but I didn't really have a frame of reference for the for what the movie was.
Yeah, I mean, it could be, I think I liked District 9, and so I was interested to see what the guy would do, you know, with kind of a big A-list actor, and you know, I have, like, middling feelings about it, but yeah, I do come down on the side of wanting to see somebody succeed with, like, an original script or something in, like, the sequel, you know, summer kind of thing. But did you guys, you know, have feelings from District 9 that you took into this movie?
For me, for sure.
What were they, positive or negative?
I remember so strongly feeling while watching District 9 that I thought the first half and the setup and the world were spectacular. And I remember thinking, oh, this is like the future of filmmaking. And then the back end dropped all of that for me. And so I left feeling disappointed.
I had an interesting experience with District 9 because I missed it as it came out. And it was sort of one of those ones that I don't know what was going on in my life, whatever. I just sort of missed it.
Yeah.
And so I saw it after, you know, you had heard all the hype about it, how it was just this awesome, you know, da-da-da-da-da movie. And so I had all these high expectations for it. And I watched it on, like, DVD or whatever. And to be honest, I don't think I ever finished the movie.
Yeah.
I tried watching it, I think, three times. I think it was like a Christmas break type of thing, like where you catch up on movies, you know? And I was watching it.
Well,
and
it was, you know, part of that probably was because it was a summer movie and then it was nominated for Best Picture. So
it was a screener.
Like, you're probably like, yeah, catching up on it.
I forgot that it was nominated for Best Picture. Was that the first year that it did
it was,
the 10 films?
It was 2009, and it was the first year. I mean, I can't remember what those other, like, you know, 8, 9, 10 kind of movies were.
Oof. But I would have never remembered that it got nominated for Best Picture.
In any case, but my point being, I guess you could say I didn't enjoy District 9 at all, being that I couldn't stay awake watching it three times. And so going into Elysium, like, you know, I knew what it was. I knew a lot of people were talking about it, but I sort of didn't trust the popular perception of District 9, or at least I didn't agree with it. And so I didn't have high expectations for this movie. And so it ended up being pretty much almost, actually it was a little bit less than what I expected, but not that much less.
Right. Yeah.
A front-handed insult.
You know, what's the
once the movie started,
there's Elysium.
Elysium. Yeah. I'm like, wow, this is such a sort of, you could tell, it was one of those films that you could recognize, this is the District 9 guy. If you,
because even of the shanty town?
The shanty,
opening,
yes. Or? For sure. The setup of the world of this dystopia on the U.S. and he switches it from South Africa to Los Angeles. But visually,
it looks the same,
it's the same.
Yeah.
and he's setting up sort of big themes and big political issues. And so, once again, but I didn't trust him this time. I didn't think he'd be able to pull it off. And so I didn't let myself go with it.
Yeah, but, I didn't get into this movie at all either. I mean, it was a pretty big letdown after.
So you were excited for it?
Yeah, I was definitely excited for it.
Had you seen trailers where you're like,
anything.
Oh. So you
went
in where maybe the visually it would be just something completely fresh.
Yeah, and I thought it would be, it was so much smaller than I thought it would be. I thought it was going to kind of have a bigger scope, a little bit like rebellion against this. If anybody hasn't seen the movie, like, you know, the rich people are living up in this space station while the poor, you know, are the only people left inhabiting the Earth, sort of like the 99% are down on Earth and the 1% live in this space station. And like, I had just, from what I saw, the brief stuff I thought it was like Matt Damon kind of leading this rebel army against the
thing. That's kind of what they wanted on an ideation phase of it. And then you didn't go back to Elysium and really experience that world at all. There's some wide shots and some very generic white people in mansions.
By the end, it felt like it was like a small neighborhood, a couple blocks.
Yeah.
Not like this thing that was housing 100,000 or a million people.
Five people can just sort of take over.
Yeah, it looked like there was one golf course,
like
a city.
Club. It looked like Florida or something. It didn't even make it seem that desirable, I thought.
But it's weird because District 9 was a small movie too, but it didn't I think because I bought into the, and it's why I liked District 9. I liked like the two main characters, the alien guy and then the South African journalist guy who ends up, you know, turning into the alien. Like, I liked those characters. And then this one, you know, it wasn't even like sort of the hokum political stuff that bothered me. It's just, just kind of boring, like plotting, like really cliched, like action stuff where it felt like it was a really badly written action, and not in a good sense, like B, but like,
well, it wasn't very self-aware about its sort of like cheesiness,
right?
Which is, it didn't seem to be taking pleasure in it. It was sort of trying to be self-serious,
right?
And I think that was sort of what,
and using, I thought, like visual cues or templates from other sci-fi movies. Like, there was points where I'm like, oh, this is the Road Warrior motif, like when they get in their cars and are driving through the desert. It's just using a lot of apocalyptic and dystopia, but that stuff he's still skilled at.
But won't good movies make references to past movies as well? I don't know that that's like sort of the standalone.
Yeah, my bigger thing was like that.
It's
it felt like
my main thing.
He didn't jump ahead from like District 9.
Exactly,
there wasn't any visuals that were good here. Felt like they could have been in the District 9 world, which, you know, I guess just when you see somebody go to a bigger movie like this, you kind of like expect some jump. I don't know.
I mean, visually, I still don't, it's not the problem with the film. He sets up this huge world and it literally becomes narrow and narrower as the film goes on. And then they have this really, I mean, there was stuff like
the girl with cancer.
Leukemia. Yeah. And then she's literally dying within a certain amount of minutes. I mean, as the movie goes on, there's smaller and smaller details that you just start to accumulate of like, oh man, this is the same thing with District 9. He starts pumping in sort of this heavy operatic music. I call it like the Tony Scott.
I'd almost call it like, it's that Inception score that's become so commonplace in any of these a little bit, you know, self-serious action movies of the boom, you know, and it's that, I mean, that would just hit over and over again and got tired of
but
it pretty
there's
quick.
Also the operatic voices, like, especially during, like, flashbacks or when you cut to the girl with leukemia, it's like, oh, like, oh, we got to really pull the heartstrings here. Let's send in that operatic music.
Yeah.
And it happened more and more, those type of elements, as the movie went on.
Yeah. Well, I mean, do you guys find anything interesting to talk about, like Matt Damon in the movie? I mean, either.
I found Jodie Foster to be laughably bad.
Well, I mean, but it's like, at least I respect that it felt like bizarre choice.
Yeah,
like,
I'd rather go with
I'm going to go and play this in, like, a few different accents. And, like, it did feel a decisive acting.
Yeah, I don't think she was given much. And so it's so clearly on paper and probably the direction she received, kind of a one note.
Yeah.
And so she's like, I'm going to do something with this. I hope. Yeah, that was enough. There's no humor. There's not a deft touch to it, where if this is going to be an action movie, I mean, he takes it so seriously, because I think he does think he's making a movie with social relevance and importance, and so that frames how he approaches it differently, because you could make a similar movie like this and have it with a little bit more lightness to it, where, because they set it up, those side characters, I don't know the actor's name, but the guy who has on a cane and his name is Spider.
Yeah, I don't
but
know
that would traditionally be sort of, you know, this sleazy guy, but has humor, brings in the humor, and he's got his band of goons with him, and that's where you would bring it. And the actor was watchable. I liked it when he was on screen. But they, you know, it wasn't that type of movie where it's just, even though it's dealing with a dystopia, it's still going to have, like, a good time.
I know we've seen a lot of other movies, so this would be a good chance to talk about maybe some smaller movies. You know, I think we each have seen, I know of at least two other movies that all three of us have seen. Greg, why don't you choose? Would you like to talk and dive into Blue Jasmine, Woody Allen's new movie?
I haven't seen it.
Oh, you haven't seen it. Okay.
No.
Then maybe the only one all three of us have seen is The Act of Killing.
Let's talk about that.
All right. Why don't you give us a real brief? Because I feel, you know, this one's, it's not out in theaters that many places.
Yeah.
It's probably one people are mostly going to watch at home when it comes out.
Well, among the circle of people who have seen Act of Killing, the sort of movie's reputation precedes itself, you know, as this sort of stamped by Errol Morris and Werner Herzog as this, like, you know, sort of documentary of the decade type of thing.
Right.
And, you know, weighty expectations going in. I had heard about it through from you. You were the first one I heard it through because you had seen it at the LA Film Festival, and then coupled with this other stuff. So, you know, I had high expectations going in. And, yeah, I mean, it's undoubtedly one of the more unique and sort of insane films that I've ever seen and that I can picture seeing just because of the, I mean, should I describe a little bit about what the movie is? I mean, the movie is about these guys reflecting upon a sort of, you know, genocide that was perpetrated, I wouldn't say a genocide, but a political sort of campaign against communists in Indonesia in the mid-1960s, and where the government sort of sponsored these essentially gangster groups, like mafia types, to, you know, root out communists on a local level and essentially murder them and wipe them out. And The Act of Killing is a documentary that meets with all these killers.
Yeah,
who
in
did
present
this,
day.
In the present day,
right.
You know, today or a couple years back.
Yeah.
And essentially asks them to, you know, talk about and recreate sort of, there's a couple things going on. One, it seems like they're kind of making a movie about this.
Well, I think it was how the director got
sort of framed it.
You know, was able to get the access to them and get them to agree to be in front of his cameras was like he was going to allow them to make a movie, you know, and sort of appeal to their egos to, because I guess part of the really interesting thing is, you know, They were part of a military coup in Indonesia that's still in power. So sort of the atrocities that were committed are still considered like great deeds by people in the country and celebrated and exalted, or at least that's the picture it paints. And then so this, you know, filmmaker went in there and put up this rather odd conceit of to have these people act in their own recreations of how they killed people.
Yeah, so they sort of do these recreations, but there's also sort of an element of the movie that is very documentary. Like, he's often interviewing them, and they're actually going through recreation. So part
it's also
of it
behind the scenes, yeah, of the making of,
and
yeah,
it's sort of, and then so there's a ton of intercutting between, and actually, like, a lot of the gist of the movie is not really the the other person guy's visions. It's a sort of analysis of it, but I mean the sort of the huge shock of the movie is just the candor with which these guys describe what they had done.
Right.
And what's so weird about it and thinking about it is so much of documentary is about this sort of withholding of information. It's like almost what we've been accustomed to in documentary, even in documentary where the
what's
guys...
like an example what, like just, a document withholds information.
Or like, almost any documentary is sort of there's all this subtext about what's sort of going on. Like, I always feel like there's a tension between, I guess, what the filmmaker ultimately ends up saying and what the subject thinks is being told about them. I guess, okay, so...
That would apply to this.
Yeah, that would apply to this very well.
Well, like, okay.
See, I think what you're saying is what the film does, like, so well, in a way. Like, that they're outwardly, they have candor about this, but really the movie is slowly going to reveal, I wish I remembered the three guys' names, because it
Anwar
does, because
is the only one I remember.
Anwar,
and he's the main guy.
It becomes through, despite the, like, I mean, Werner Herzog would call it surreal. I didn't find the film surreal in the way he's talking
about it.
Right,
I didn't either.
But it's his movie in terms of he has, in the way I interpret, he does have this big dramatic arc where he is feeling, whether you want to call it guilt, remorse, or regret, and you see that transformation through the film. And I think that, like, that's what the documentaries that you're talking about, where like a filmmaker wants that to happen, and whether the subject goes through that,
yeah,
or not.
No, I mean that's, yeah, no, I think I was making a little bit of a different point that's maybe inaccurate, but I guess maybe it's not a very coherent point, so we can just move on. But I guess what was shocking, I would say, going into and watching the movie, and yes, the character changes, and there are a lot of sort of traditional sort of filmmaking storytelling stuff that goes on, but just the sort of, yeah, I would just say the candor with which they talk about these sort of horrific,
yeah, that's
things.
The jumping off point,
right?
Is the candor is,
and
and then there's that candor where, you know, you have that instant reaction of, like, you know, evil, awful people right away talking about these things. But then, over the course of the movie, where, you know, it doesn't even take that long, the guy is kind of a compelling character that you do, like, I found myself, you know, at least sympathizing, not, you know, in a certain, with certain aspects of his character, like, or that you are, he's a compelling person to watch on screen and not in, like, a villain sort of way.
He's a human being.
Right, exactly.
And that it very sort of normal and relatable, and you can picture yourself just having a conversation,
yeah,
with him. Meanwhile, you know that he, you know, ruthlessly murdered over 1,000 people, like, in brutal,
right,
primal,
right,
sort
but
of
you don't have
ways.
That, and you never have that sense of, like, you know, his neighbors should be scared of him now. It's not like that crazy psychopath. It's like this very, you know, whether you want to call it government engineered or societal engineered thing that, you know, in some way, it's that tough thing between, like, you know, there's the obvious victims who were killed, and then these guys who were so young when they were sort of, you know, thrown into this. And it's, yeah.
Yeah.
And there's, because there are two other executioners. I have so many questions about how this movie was made, but you kind of trace three executioners, and one, Anwar, becomes the central character because,
yeah,
he's having a transformation. One of them is a psychotic, or at least portrayed.
But
as
he's
a psychotic.
Also the one who admits most that Is this the guy?
I think you're talking about the child molester big guy, right?
Not the one who's dresses in females' clothing.
Right, not that. But the guy who sort of comes from, he lives in another country.
He still has, I killed these people. Yeah. And then.
But he's the only one who admits, like, we did an awful thing.
But he has the least regret by far.
Well, at least publicly. He's the one with the family.
Yeah, exactly.
No, he has sort of an interesting. I think the movie has regret except for the one guy.
Right. That's why, and so that's why. I mean, from a filmmaking standpoint, and whether it's if you're making a documentary, I don't think you have a documentary if you don't have one of these characters sort of thinking back and being like questioning his actions. If you just follow the guy with the family, it's a good counterpoint. You need him in this, but there's nowhere kind of the movie can go the way this one does. If he doesn't,
it would still be a pretty interesting movie. It might not be as powerful.
And I don't know if you need a feature then on it. It can be more of like.
Do you know? You know, some of the articles I've read about it were. You know, when Werner Herzog just came on to sort of, you know, lend his name, him and Remorse, they didn't really, you know, they were very late in the process and are just doing that. But one
Herzog
of the things he talked
Q&A
about
at the screening. Okay.
So, one of the things, though, that I've read is that, you know, his biggest thing is that they were going to cut the very final scene that, you know, we're talking about is a very big, a little bit revelatory. The guy's already going through some regret or whatever.
What scene is he referring to when he says that? Because watching the movie, I wasn't even sure. I'm like,
well, it's the last scene of the movie when Anwar goes in his, you know, I mean, if anybody, you know, most people are
because the last 15 minutes
that, so
is incredible,
but like, you know, this movie certainly would be a little bit spoiler stuff, and so I'll just, you know, we're gonna reveal the end. But
the spoilers won't ruin the movie.
Though. Right. But you know, when he's essentially
dry
heaving,
that's
for
a
10
whole
minutes.
Sequence, though.
Well, but that's what's the last scene.
I don't know where he would have ended the movie if he didn't have. To me, that
he would have had a different ending. It would have been different. But
the final 15 minutes was the best.
Right, but they were going to put it out without that.
I mean, to,
you know,
because
and
that
so
answers
what I'm
all
saying,
his
obviously
questions.
The guy thought he had a movie. But I think that's just what I'm getting at. It's like obviously him and his producing partners, like they still thought they had a movie, and I actually had, you know, the last scene to me, like. There was throughout this documentary.
When he's up on the rooftop and dry heaving.
But this is getting at like a bigger thing about documentary and just the way we watch documentary. One of the things I liked about it and makes it so troubling is just like I am so skeptical, even in this movie, the entire time of like, what am I seeing that's real? What am I seeing that's staged? Even the last scene.
Oh, yeah.
I had mixed feelings of like, you know, when he walks off, when Anwar, they let him walk out of the shop.
And they hold him.
It was like, you know, I partly felt like, it could have picked, you know.
Yeah,
was that shot from the scene?
Thought that they said, man, this is really good. We need you making an exit here.
Yeah.
I had this same thing at that point where the camera was in such a certain position and just knowing how this works a little bit in filmmaking, you would say, hey, can you go do your exit again?
But do you think this was any intention
at all?
But do you think this was
any
intention in the movie about
it?
Like,
makes me question
about the idea
filmmaking.
Of film, because it's very much about
it opens
filmmaking.
Up questions of filmmaking.
But do you think that was any intent in the movie of like about people telling their story and just how, you know, gray it is of what the truth is versus the things, and then these guys are giving their version of the truth in a fictional form, and it's obviously so ridiculous. Like, whether, you know, it was even trying to question these kind of documentaries at large, I don't know.
Yeah, I think those are all valid questions, because it brings up the trustworthiness of, like, memory, and it's like this meta-cinema level where they're reenacting their versions of these horrible executions through Hollywood genre scenes, which is just so strange. That's why kind of I think the movie is getting all its sort of talk is because of that when the Herzog talks about surreal quality, I think that's what he's getting at.
I think he's also talking about the surreal
and their
imagery
in it.
Yeah, but
those are the movie scenes. Those are the genre
I know, but
scenes.
The surreal imagery that they came up with. I mean, the very last scene of the movie is like him
doing a huge movie,
getting the him doing in the waterfall with the women dancing around,
and he gets the medal.
And
the
communist guy gives him a medal for thank you for killing me. And all this stuff. I mean, that is totally surreal. And when I never understood this, why they were like burned and they had that makeup on their faces.
When they're being soldiers.
Yeah, where they're like interrogating people and stuff like that. I mean, that I thought was all very bizarro and surreal. But I mean,
him being haunted, it blends into this sort of dream world of and his dreams and sort of filmmaking as having a dream quality.
Yeah.
To it, and that's sure. what I.
But I actually didn't find the presentation of those was so stark and unreal that it wasn't really that surreal. Like the stuff that's surreal is like, I guess there's the candor of them talking about, and like what's surreal is the guy, you know, in that opening scene of the movie when he makes the guy sit on his knees and you know demonstrates how he strangles the guy, and you're like. Oh my God, is he really going to hurt that guy? Yeah. And like putting this wire around his neck. And
and he's
like,
looking at the camera and smugging and smiling.
Yeah. And then dances. Really like, you know, in the same
thing.
Yeah.
I would want to point out one weird thing that you're talking about, the Hollywood genre stuff that I thought was really interesting in the movie was, you know, and it ties to all of this is that, you know, the guys who perpetrated the killings were like very influenced by Hollywood gangster movies that they had seen. And that they're sort of like in a weird way like modeled some of their actual killings after ways that they were killed had seen
well,
people
they even
killed
called
in
themselves
movies
gangsters from that but had like that weird free man definition.
Well,
no,
I looked that up actually after the thing and like that actually there is sort of a history of that gangster term. It is an Indonesian word. That does mean free man, and it actually is a history with sort of the way Indonesia was colonized by the Dutch, and how a lot of people went to work for the Dutch East India Company, and how a lot of gangsters or free men, sort of this word, this Indonesian word that roughly translates to that, were people that were sort of you know criminals that did refuse to work for. Those colonial companies and sort of form this underworld. And that's actually how they sort of saw them descended from that sort of history in their country. So I actually thought that was interesting because I was like, I can't believe this. These guys have made, because I thought they had made that up, that gangster meant free man.
Right.
I thought that was actually a fiction that they had made up in order to justify their killing. But actually it was not, I mean, in a way, it was sort of still the same thing used to justify the killing, but it wasn't.
And they have
actually
their own definition of what free man means. It's not ours, obviously.
Yeah,
but
it has a little different.
Well, did you guys like either know of or you know just bringing up the, you know because there is a little controversy in the movie when it first came out. You know, whether was it Toronto last year or I can't remember what film festival, but I remember reading about it just. You know, there was this side of people that saw it that thought it was very, you know, hewed too far to, like, exploitation, filmmaking, of putting these, you know, so to speak, war criminals, like, and using them as an you know, making them an entertainment and, like, almost exploiting the crimes that they did because these people, you know, got away with it and almost giving them a stage, you know. Is that troublesome? I mean,
I didn't find that to be the case. I do. That's a, you know, that's a sort of age old thing. It's like, you know, can criminals write their memoirs and histories and profit from it? Should we be encouraging that kind of thing?
And they even say, we're the winners. We write the history.
Right.
Yeah.
They say that in the movie.
I balance that against though, sort of, the I would call it like almost like an it's sort of like once you get into that sort of moralizing thing you start I think sort of whitewashing history and whitewashing the human nature, and I think you get into trouble when you start saying, oh, I'm only going to listen to stories that validate, you know, the way that things ought to be, yeah, or the way no, we, I mean, we
I
think
I didn't expect
be.
That you guys would really have yeah. anything. I just didn't know if it, like, sparked any, you know.
No, I mean, and also, I mean,
the
I
audience
might,
I saw yeah. it with, of course, I mean, they're the, what was so, to me, what makes, partly this movie so interesting is it's tackling, and it's tackling genocide and participants in genocide, because it was, I didn't even know that hundreds of thousands of people were killed in Indonesia. You yeah. just don't learn right. about that. You learn about the Khmer Rouge, maybe, and but I didn't know about this. That this is such the form for just direct talking heads from the victims' families and presenting
right
and. You know, that's the level that documentary, the majority of the time, goes. And here, this was a documentary that takes the same issue, and I, the same, for lack of a better, I mean, moral stance, because I heard Oppenheimer give a Q&A, and you listening to him, in a way, took away from the movie afterwards. The movie had so
that's
much
a sign
more
of a good movie.
Mystery yeah. and complexity
yeah.
versus what then he said. And I'm like, this guy should not be giving a Q&A. It's taking away from the movie.
Because but he's kind of comes from it more from
yes,
a socially, very
absolutely.
Socially conscious. And like I read an interview yeah. with him and I had the same thing where I was kind of like he, it had talked about how he had been there doing like a documentary about, you know, union, kind of a very prototypical liberal documentary thing, and then kind of stumbled upon these guys, and it was like, oh, you know, that's a different, you know, you have a different vision of the filmmaker, because it does, and, you know, you hear that Herzog is involved, and like, yeah, it's, you know, that's part of what was exciting about it to me, was certainly, I mean, we're all kind of saying the same thing about it just being like feeling like documentaries
well,
have gotten so
I don't know
stale.
How he made the movie. Right. I would, even more so after hearing him. One, I still don't know how he actually was in the country making it and convincing these people to do it. But two, I can't believe hearing him talk and what he believes in that he would go about making this story in this manner.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I would go so far. Hearing you say that is kind of interesting because I watch this movie and I'm not like, oh, this is like made by some exceptional filmmaker or
right.
something. I'm like, this is something that was stumbled upon,
right.
like as sort of like, this is not something you could set out to do. This is not like,
right. yeah,
this
I
is
mean,
a, this
even
is a
the idea
thing.
Of like
the
recreation
thing.
Of the movie probably somehow came from, yeah, it wasn't like,
I mean, the
yeah.
entire thing.
I guess
I mean,
you want to know what the difference would be, you know, the version that would be setting out to do that and knowing the whole thing would be the movie we did last year, The Ambassador. It would be that would be the guy.
Right.
And
right.
and like this movie is on such a different level
oh, yeah.
of complexity.
So much
and
more
stuff
interesting.
Than that. Yeah.
So much more. I mean,
right.
profoundly more interesting.
Right.
But
and,
its framework is still in sort
yeah,
of that Mads Brugger.
Right. Yeah.
Right.
right.
What's real, what's not.
A little bit disguising
yeah.
your identity to extract this narrative that otherwise couldn't get out.
Yeah.
You know, that like you have to be a criminal in that guise to tell the story to the rest of the world. And that's still pretty interesting. But yeah, that guy didn't set out to do this, obviously.
I mean, and I don't know. I would say this is a sort of thing that I sort of tangentially think about. I don't know if I think about it all the time, but it has to do with like, you know, the there's sort of a, you know, emphasis on like the filmmaker, auteur theory, all that
right.
kind of stuff. And I sort of separate that from like, what is the sort of idea of the movie that is the idea or the story or whatever you want to call it that is sort of, that exists separate from the filmmaker. And how I think we sort of underemphasize, at least sort of the way film is studied and thought about, there's sort of an, I would say, a little bit of a, an overemphasis on the filmmaker and the auteur and all that stuff, and a less attention paid to sort of what the movie is separate from the filmmaker. And I think this movie actually is a movie that sort of illustrates that idea that I sort of don't really have a theory on necessarily, but I think it's something that is worth thinking about, and it's something that I think about, because yeah, this movie does not, I don't even know what this movie is. It's sort of, it's, yeah, it's different.
Well, no, I think, that's, I think yeah, it I think pushes the documentary. Yeah. For, this is where I like to see, this is where I think, this is to me, like, we talk a lot about these big Hollywood movies, and this is, like, to me, the level of modern filmmaking, or at least where documentary is exciting.
Well, have to you guys watched any of these, like, Vice documentaries on HBO?
Barely, no.
New series? I mean, they're, because I saw two before they had this show, like, hour-long Vice documentaries at a film festival a couple of years ago, and was, like, pretty surprised by them. I mean, they're a little bit, like, similar vein, where at least they're going to sort of parts of the world that it feels like we really don't know much about, and, like, putting themselves in somewhat dangerous situations where it just, it's where, like, sort of modern journalism doesn't go anymore, and really, like, pulling out, and they're not necessarily as compelling, like, story-wise. They are more journalistic, like, observational, like, you know, holy, you know, they're a little bit, they're not absurdist in their technique, but they are a little bit like, we live in a really crazy world, let's go, you know, look at it a little bit. And it does, there is something in line with it, with these, with, like, the Mads Brugger stuff, and then, you know, The Act of Killing, that I think's kind of interesting in the documentary world, but still so far down from, like, yeah, the docs. So, like, I went and saw, like, 20 Feet from Stardom, you know, it was this doc in the theater, and, you know, I mean, it was, yeah, I'm not a big fan of seeing documentaries in the theater, so it's not surprising when I say, like, yeah, it would have been fine for me to watch this. I would have preferred it as an hour-long HBO thing, because it's kind of an interesting subject, and, like, the music's great, but it's probably a half hour, 45 minutes too long for my taste, but it's a hugely popular movie, you know, with a certain, like, probably the biggest doc, I think, of the year. I might be mistaken. But, you know, just because I know we've seen a ton of movies, like, run down the movies you've seen and what was, like, what stood out or what was, you know, like, oh, why did I see that? Phil.
I've seen A Really Good Time at the Cinema. I'm So Excited, the Almodovar. Yeah. I knew nothing. I just heard it was Almodovar, and I want to go to the movie theater that night.
And kind of mixed words.
You'd love it, like, Andy. Yeah, you would love it more than anyone. It's just this raunchy sex comedy that it's like a Spanish soap opera that takes place on an airplane, and a lot of fun, but it does have some depth underneath it. But it's disguised as a Spanish soap opera, and it was just a lot of fun.
Yeah. Well, anything else?
I've seen, Blue Jasmine. Going to see a Woody Allen movie on, like, a random weeknight, and the font comes on and the jazz music comes on. I just feel comfortable. I feel like at home, and even, like, to the point where, yeah, this wasn't this, like, to kind of bad Woody Allen, I still enjoy.
Yeah.
To sum up, this one, not a date movie. That's my recommendation.
No, it was a hard one.
Yeah, if you're Woody Allen, should give people who are on a date their money back, because yeah, he makes the men be complete bastards, and it's just really dark. Like,
did you have any counter date movies that you'd like to recommend, Ray?
God, I can't even remember all the movies I've seen. The ones that are popping to my head, and neither are date movies. I saw World War Z, and
that's good. People, I feel like everybody's talking about that as, like, a little bit of a sleeper, better than you'd expect.
Yeah, it's probably the best big summer movie that I saw. And I saw Lone Ranger, which I was thinking about a little bit. Like, I didn't think it was as bad. I don't know why everyone panned Lone Ranger so much, because it really wasn't that much better or worse than the Pirates movies, in my opinion. And yet the Pirates movies are considered these huge worldwide global success, and Lone Ranger is this, like, you know, considered the biggest disaster of the summer or something. But, like, on a sort of just, they're both kids' movies that have some fun action type of thing. Like, I didn't like Lone Ranger substantially less than Pirates. But anyway, so I thought that was kind of an interesting.
Well, yeah, I thought I would just, you know, because I actually, like, finally sort of took a little, I feel like I've been threatening to do this for a long time and, like, look these movies up all the time. This, like, video on demand world of movies. Mm-hmm. Like,
I did, you know, that a little bit.
I'm always, like, a little bit interested. And, like, we even watched one, you know, way back last year. But, you know, always I find myself not committing to them or whatever. And then this month, I mean, I just wanted to read this list of titles of, like, indie world filmmakers who were suddenly, all these movies were this, you know, and it probably ties in a little bit to what we talked about the past couple times about, like, the state of the movies and what it means or anything. But just so interesting that all these filmmakers in one month, like, their movies, these are all these ones that came out, like, pre-theatrical, where they come out on demand, mm-hmm. and then they come out in theaters a few weeks later. So you had Prince Avalanche, David Gordon Green, The Canyons, Paul Schrader, Passion, Brian De Palma, Only God Forgives, Nick yep. Reffin, Drinking Buddies, Joe Swanberg, Touchy Feely, Lynn Shelton, and then you also had Ain't Them Body Saints, which is a really big indie yep. movie, Loveless, pretty big indie movie, and then even on HBO, Clear History, that, you know, was really more of a Larry David movie, but Greg Mottola directed it. Just like this, you know, it's like, wow, you know, this video on demand. So I jumped into that a little bit and saw Prince Avalanche and Drinking Buddies and kind of came away, you know, I think Drinking Buddies is probably the more solid, like, front to back movie of the two, and it stuck with me a little bit more. I think I went into it probably hoping it would be more of a comedy than it is, and it's a little bit drama, kind of depressing, you know, but, you know, character study of two friends, really.
I watched it.
Did you watch it?
Yeah. Okay. I couldn't hold back. Yeah. And I had the same reaction, though, of, like, I went on demand, and all these movies that are set to maybe play a week or yeah. two in the theaters, well,
like,
are
Drinking
all
Buddies
there.
Comes out this weekend right. in L.A.
And yeah. Prince Avalanche is in the theater.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe Only God Forgives was up there. That was really startled me.
Yeah.
I'm like, and Loveless, I had just seen a trailer for literally the
in
night
the
before.
Theater?
Yeah, in the yeah. theater. And it's on demand. Yeah. Where, and so I'm looking, I'm like, oh, you can see all these. And I'm like, yeah. I mean, it was just like an eye opener.
Yeah.
And these are, to me, these are major, or you know, these are indie films that I would go see in the theater. And like, wait, you hear that they're coming out in August or something. And then you turn on demand and they're there.
Yeah.
So, but I really enjoyed yeah. Drinking Buddies.
Yeah, I have a feeling that you're like that. I can't say as much about Prince Avalanche. It was the smallest movie I've seen in a long while, and I've seen some pretty small indies, and this was like, I mean, it felt like they went and shot this in a week, you know, and I'm sure it was more than that. I don't want to discount, like,
I heard it's pretty bad.
But, you know, I did think Emile Hirsch gives, like, a performance, and, you know, when you, like, connect this to Killer Joe and stuff, there's, like, some interest there, and I never was like, oh, God, when is this going to be over? I mean, you know, it's a 90-minute movie or 85-minute movie, and it still moved for me. But, yeah, of those, I think Drinking Buddies was a better indie.
I mean, and to think that Prince Avalanche, I mean, that's David Gordon Green, who we've seen his films together in the theater, and we're like, we'll see every movie this guy does. And now, 5 years later, or however long, and he's making, like, I don't know, it's... I just haven't heard good things about Prince Avalanche and his past several movies. I get why he does it.
I hope you saw Your Highness.
I did. I like Your Highness.
It might be my favorite movie.
But I watched it on
HBO.
HBO.
Right, yeah.
But I didn't see that in the theater. But remember, when we saw Undertow
yeah.
in the theater, and it kind of feels like the guy's a different filmmaker.
But that's okay.
But
I hope he is.
But he was sort of, you know, for the people who saw his early work, especially our age,
right.
it was like,
yeah,
this
it was
is
inspiring,
our
like,
our
you know, we
guy.
Saw somebody, yeah. you know, a few years older, getting to make movies that, yeah, we wish, you know,
and
we
then,
were making, so.
Yeah. For the record, I never felt that way, but that's fine. I like some of his movies, but I don't make him out to be, you know.
Yeah, no, I don't want to make. I mean, no. I like, you know, all the Real Girls and George Washington.
But that's a, you know, that's just different tastes, you know.
Yeah.
But should we rescind what we said last week about, you know, all the complaining about the state of movies and stuff?
It does because feel like a much then all better of a sudden, movie.
All no, of a I sudden, won't say that.
All of a sudden, in a month, what are you talking? We had like. Almost like 8 movies we wanted to talk about.
Yeah. Almodovar is an international filmmaker. Woody Allen, you've even said, oh, can we just get past the Woody Allen?
No, I never said that. What are you talking about?
Maybe not let's bring up Woody Allen again. I mean,
well, no, I get more excited about trying to see something different.
Yeah, you know exactly
I've seen what a Woody Allen movie is going to be, and like I still enjoy some of his movies, but that doesn't, I guess, get me super excited about cinema to see another, you know, Woody Allen movie. Yeah.
Well, one month shouldn't like totally cancel out. You know, it's still. Statistically, just 1 month.
But the point being, like that, you know, it's sort of like
there's some
interesting stuff going. I mean, yeah. I don't know. There's a lot of these movies. I guess I would say this: there's a lot of movies that I still want to see.
Yeah.
That I haven't yet seen. I mean, that
we didn't even bring up like, you know. Yeah, Fruitvale Station, which you saw, which is like kind of a pretty big movie.
Let's bring that up, even if only Greg has seen it. Because you have strong opinions, but you have strong opinions on
it. Well, I haven't seen the movie, so I have strong opinions about like the reception of the movie and just like the, you know, in that it brings up these cynical feelings that I don't like feeling, but you know, I don't want to talk about, you know,
well, we shouldn't talk about a movie we haven't.
Right.
Why?
So you've seen it.
But you've seen
it. I could say what I thought of it.
Yeah.
I wasn't a big fan of the movie. Like I thought this again, I'll go back to my sort of idea of the movie theory or whatever is that I mean the bottom line is that, you know, an incident occurred where a guy was shot in a horrible accident, tragedy, whatever you want to call it. Even the movie though sort of takes a position that it's just an accident, stupidity, pure stupidity, and it's an incident, but to me that wasn't a story. Yeah. And so they sort of craft a sort of day in the life movie at it. And so the movie to me was not really effective. And I thought there was some sort of like, there's a bit of cheese to build in emotions and sort of some stuff that just didn't, for a movie that presents itself as sort of a realistic thing that happened, you know, based on a real story, there's some like kind of absurd incidents. And I talk about, there's sort of a, these are sort of spoilers, but there's an incident with a dog and there's a conversation that our main character has with a guy outside a restroom as they're waiting that sort of, they sort of stuck out to me as sore thumb elements of the movie that didn't feel realistic at all in a movie that's supposed to be realistic. As far as like, you know, that it gained popularity or anything, however, I don't have any beef with a small movie that, you know, somehow hits with a particular audience. And I did like, I will say this, being from the Bay Area, I did like seeing sort of a movie set in the Bay Area, and sort of I thought the dialogue was actually really well done, like the way that people spoke and sort of the character, it felt realistic. So, and like think something that I related to, I guess. So I like that. The movie that it sort of reminded me a little bit of was a movie called Better Luck Tomorrow. I don't know if you guys remember that movie, which was similarly based on a real incident.
Was it?
Which is Better Luck Tomorrow? Because
it's like the Asian teenagers who kind of, you know, get a little bit into like high achieving Asian teenagers who like cross over into crime.
They end up killing a guy.
The movie I thought of, I'm just hearing Fruitvale Station, I'm like, oh, I've seen them. It's called, it was a French movie called Hate.
With Vincent Cassette.
I don't even remember who, I mean, when did that come out? Like the late 90s? Wasn't that a day in the life and it ended up with the main character being killed?
Yeah, I didn't see
it. And so I'm like, the day in the life and then ending in tragedy, I'm like, that is not, to me, a built-in narrative, and this is a true story.
Yeah. No, and I mean, this was somewhat of a ripped from the headlines type of movie. But
it's obviously eliciting, like, really strong responses from people.
People
so it's
are
sort of
enjoying
like, can't
it.
Be
yeah, no,
denied,
people are...
You know?
People are enjoying it.
And that's
it.
Why we, you know, it becomes.
But it's the same as, I mean, people get pulled into social issue documentaries. I mean, it's put like the act of killing in the way they approach sort of a horrific events versus how you go and, popularity of Fruitvale Station and that narrative. Where if he doesn't get killed at the end, and if you don't go in, everyone going into the movie knows that's going to happen. Is there a movie?
But it's the whole conceit of the movie.
But I'm like, I just...
Well no, there isn't, but that's why there is a movie, because the guy got killed, right?
I mean, to me, people talk... I haven't really formed this yet, but to me, that's in a way... When people talk, oh, when people bring up exploitation in cinema or...
Yeah.
I mean, to me, this is one... piece that this is exploitation because people are going in knowing he's going to be killed, so you're watching the movie the whole time knowing he's going to be killed.
People also went to Jaws to sort of see the shark at the end too, you know.
It was good timing that it came out, because I literally passed by the Fruitvale Station on the BART in the past 2 weeks, so
maybe there was a Fruitvale Station in the Fruitvale Station.
So it's become a tourist attraction.
Well, anyways, a big movie going into the summer and onto the fall.
All right.
We'll see what we see.
Sounds good.
Adios.